And the gospel lesson for this morning from the 13th chapter of Matthew's gospel. Herein we begin a series of parables that Jesus will tell to the disciples explaining about the kingdom of heaven. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat there while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen." And yet the disciples didn't necessarily understand, so they asked Jesus for an explanation. And he said, "Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the rocky path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such a person has no root, but endures only for a while. And when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world, and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. May we be that soil in which the seed of the word takes root and grows and produces abundant yield. Well, the way our mother tells it, my brother and I have been going at it hammer and tongs since the day we were conceived. And how we were conceived is a story in and of itself, and maybe you've heard it before, but it doesn't bear telling today. Suffice it to say that we were conceived, and apparently nothing about our mother's pregnancy went smoothly. The normal aches and pains associated with being pregnant doubled because we were, after all, twins. Her ankles swelled and her feet hurt. Her morning sickness lasted throughout the day, which was compounded by unbelievable heartburn. And when she tried to lie down to get some much-needed rest, well, that was just our signal to resume wrestling. Which is what we did constantly, as in day and night, for 9 long months. In the small confines of our mother's womb, my twin brother Esau and I duked it out for uterine domination. He'd try a sharpshooter, I'd do a stunner. I'd return his pile driver with a power bomb. He'd throw me with a backbreaker, I'd return the favor with a brain buster. And for every half Nelson in which I'd hold him, he'd slip out and pin me in a Boston crab. On and on it went, day after day, week after wretched week for our poor mother. Weary with this complicated pregnancy, my mother asked, on the verge of tears, if it is to be this way, why do I go on? Why is this happening to me? Why do I even live? Afraid to say that that's the kind of pain that we caused our mother. Not just the pain that comes from stretched ligaments and contractions and leg cramps and back pain and headaches. Not just the pain of swelling breasts, incessant heartburn, and ongoing morning sickness. We caused my mother grief. A grief that only intensified when she asked why it had to happen this way to her. When she went to talk to the priest about it, the way women would go to their obstetrician today, and shared with him about the constant battle being waged in her womb, the news wasn't good. Or should I say it was mixed? Her babies were healthy enough and developing appropriately, but there was a real war going on in her womb. Two nations, in fact, are in your womb, the Lord said to my mother by way of an oracle, and two people born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. It was a curious report, but it could hardly have been more prescient, for the battle of the babies continued right up through the birth canal. My brother Esau managed to make it out first, but he wasn't going without a fight from me. I came out a close second, holding on to Esau's heel with all of my might, and that's why my parents named me Jacob. The polite version of my name means he takes by the heel. The less polite version means he supplants. I'm sure I have no idea what they're talking about. We're fraternal twins, Esau and I. We look nothing alike. He emerged from the womb all hairy and red, and he's stayed that way all his life. I had almost no hair at birth, and my complexion has always been far less ruddy. But those were hardly our only differences. Esau joined the Scouts and the Future Farmers of America, and he ran track. I, by contrast, took piano lessons and studied French, and I was a champion debater. As he grew up, Esau became an outdoorsman, a skilled hunter, and he was by no means a chef, but he did manage to master one culinary dish, a version of venison that our father Isaac craved. It was on that basis alone that Esau won my father's affection. Esau was my father's favorite child. I, by contrast, pursued more scholarly endeavors, attending graduate school, writing essays, hanging out in independent coffee houses. I stayed close to home, which pleased my mother. I was her favorite child. My brother, the rough one, and I, the quiet, mild-mannered one, continued to fight each other for our parents' favor. Well, one day I was at Mom and Dad's cooking a stew when Esau came in from one of his many hunting expeditions. "I'm famished," he yelled, or rather that's what he would have said if his vocabulary had grown beyond that of a third grader. But Esau had shown little intellectual aptitude. Mother and I had frequently to inform him that Sports Illustrated and Field and Stream did not constitute scholarly journals. He could not use them for his book reports. "Let me have some of that red stuff you're cooking," he bellowed. "I'm starving." I was about to point out to him that a man of his size and build could hardly qualify as starving when it occurred to me that this might be my opportunity to score something bigger than a point against my brother, who never seemed to keep score of these things anyway. "Oh, of course, brother dearest," I smiled. "I'd be glad to let you have my stew. But first, sell me your birthright." If Esau had been any smarter than he was, he would have laughed in my face and pinned me in a Boston crab the way he used to when we were babies. But, and how shall I put this delicately, Esau is a few French fries short of a Happy Meal. You might say Esau is about as sharp as a marble. his dipstick doesn't quite reach the oil, if you know what I'm saying. But I digress. As I was saying, if Esau had been any smarter, there's no way he would have even entertained the notion of selling me his birthright, because the birthright entitled him to leadership in our household and 2/3 of the estate upon our father's death. Esau, bless his heart, doesn't always think with his head. On that day, he was thinking with his stomach, and his stomach told Esau that it was hungry and it wanted food. And Esau himself explained, what good was a birthright when he was starving to death? Now, perhaps, friends, I haven't been completely clear about what I was really saying. What I was really saying is, in other words, big brother, drop dead. Give me your inheritance. Make me the older brother, the heir, the firstborn, the head of the family. Subvert the entire pattern of Near Eastern social arrangement, the foundation upon which an entire society is built. Give me the power and the privilege, the bounty and the blessings that would come to you just because your ticket was drawn in the lottery of life. That wasn't fair. Esau hadn't earned it. I was just as good a child, if not better, than he ever was. So I made him swear like we had done 1,000 times before as boys, only this time I had a notary present. And Esau sold me his birthright for a mess of pottage. If only he had known to call it that, he said it was a bowl of stew. I was feeling generous, so I threw in some complimentary breadsticks and a nice jug of wine on the house, which he ate and drank before he headed back for the fields. What a dolt. Some people say that I robbed my brother blind. I prefer to think of it as a business deal. Esau wanted stew. I wanted the birthright. I set the price, and Esau was willing to pay. I can't help it if Esau didn't quite possess the business acumen, the financial acuity, or the plain common sense to know that the deal was not to his advantage. But a deal's a deal, and we shook on it. Esau was our father's favorite child, but that's no reason that he should get twice as much as me. After all, I was my mother's favorite child. Sometimes you've just got to look out for number one. You've got to take what's yours. You've got to grab it, even if you grab it by the heel, and you've got to hold on for dear life. If you're lucky, you'll find some folks in life who are willing to sell their birthright at bargain basement prices. The fact is, we all have our price. I have mine. Esau had his. You have yours. But are you willing to sell your birthright as a child of God? Well, let's just say that I knew what was at stake. Everything in the world was riding on that birthright. We're a people of the promise. After all, the promise that God had made to my grandfather Abraham and to my father Isaac, a promise of life and love and land. God had promised that he would bless our family. God had promised that through our family, God would bless all of the families of the earth. That's our birthright, and Esau was willing to sell it for nothing. So did I take his birthright? Sure. Was it by unconventional means? I suppose. Could you call it unethical? Well, I guess if you're going to get all moralistic about it. Am I a con, a crook, a shark and a schnook? Well, some people have said so. But remember what God had said. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. God often works by reversing the natural order of things, by turning the world upside down, by choosing the younger over the elder, by letting God's reign fall on the righteous and the unrighteous alike. I was doing my part. I was playing my role. I was being me, staying true to who I am. And I wanted to grab hold of the promise, the birthright, the blessing, just as strongly as I had grabbed my brother's heel. And it turns out that God had a stronger grasp on me than I could begin to imagine.